Good morning, New Mexico. Welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting from the Santa Fe Baking Company, streaming on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, thanks to Dotfoil Computer Services, and we're at facebook.com/radiocafe. Later on in the program, Robert Knott will be with us talking about tomorrow's school board elections. I'd like now to welcome to the program Elsa Lopez and Maria Pina. They are from Somos Un Pueblo Unido, and Reverend Holly Beaumont, who is from Interfaith Worker Justice New Mexico. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
Always a pleasure to be here.
Nice to have you. And nice to have you back, Elsa and Holly. And this is the first time we've had Marina on the air. So we are here to talk about immigrant issues in the state of New Mexico. And let's start with this issue of immigrant driver's licenses. Governor Martinez ran on a platform of repealing the immigrant driver's license law, which is part of our law here in New Mexico. And I was thinking maybe we could talk about, I mean, this law hasn't been here forever. How did it come into being in the first place? What's the history of the immigrant driver's license law?
Well, I'm thrilled to have the opportunity to talk about a little bit about the history. You know, Somos Un Pueblo Unido is an immigrant-based organization here in Santa Fe with close to 2,000 members all over the state. We're a statewide immigrant rights organization. And the how it came about, really, it was during I campaigned, basically built up immigrants around a kitchen table, said, what do we need in our community? And this was mostly women. And they said, we need a driver's license to drive our kids around, to take them to school, to drive to work. We're driving anyway. We want to be able to buy insurance. We want to be able to comply with the laws like everybody else. And that's how it was born. We really had no idea how to change the law. It was really a truly community experience and community learning experience. We started reaching out to different people in the state, especially law enforcement. The reason why we reached out to law enforcement, it was because a lot of people feared law enforcement when they would be stopped on the street driving without a driver's license. So we thought that it was crucial to have their input in how it affected them in their job and in promulgating public safety for all in New Mexico, to have people driving around without a proper identification and without insurance and all of this, right? So they came to the table back in 2003. We actually reached out to Representative Miguel Garcia from Bernalillo, who introduced the law. We wrote the bill so that it was good for public safety with input of law enforcement, especially here from Santa Fe at that time, Chief of Police Beverly Lennon, and our sheriff at that time, I believe, was still Solano. We basically wrote this law with not only community input coming from community, but with law enforcement, with faith groups, with domestic violence organization who really wanted to create a way for people to identify when they were victims of a crime, basically.
Say a little bit more about this question. I mean, what do driver's licenses have to do with domestic violence?
Well, it's very interesting. You know, when we had domestic violence groups coming to the table, they brought a very interesting insight to this discussion, because when you're a victim of domestic violence and you want help from the police and you don't have a proper or valid ID from the state of New Mexico, sometimes what people feared is having to show their foreign documents, basically, and say, I'm an immigrant, and say the reason basically why I don't have a driver's license is because I'm undocumented. So they would fear that instead of getting help, they would be deported, right? And it was a perceived fear from community because they couldn't properly identify themselves before police. When you go to court to ask for a restriction order, you have to properly identify yourself, and people were using foreign national documents, and that also was hard for courts, right, for court clerks, and it was really hard for them to even take that step to come forward and actually say, I'm a victim of domestic violence. So it was a great insight, like I said, coming from domestic violence organizations, to be able to be on the table and have this information and share it with us, with the legislators.
I find it fascinating that a group of immigrants sitting around the kitchen table thinking about what are all the different issues that we could be talking about and what is our greatest need. The greatest need is something as basic as having a driver's license.
That's right. A lot of people take, I think most people take their driver's license we all do for granted. We use our driver's license for many, many things, including writing a check, renting a movie, but mostly as a way of identifying ourselves, right? We become that person who is, you know, with that identity in our wallet with our driver's license. It was, you know, we've been doing community meetings all over the state. Like I said, we have members all over the state. And one of the first things we ask members of different communities is, who gave you driver's licenses? And the usual question, no falla, every time, right? They said, Governor Bill Richardson. And, you know, we have to tell a story of how this was born around a kitchen table, immigrant, mostly women, who decided that this is what we needed and move forward this idea. And we thought, oh, my God, can we really do this? You know, and then we have people obviously join, and we formed a coalition of multiple organizations from all over the state. But people are in disbelief that this is our law, really. And obviously the legislators took a stand on this, and we had bipartisan support. But also the governor signed it, of course. But it was really community bringing this specific issue to the table.
It is a reminder that virtually every law of that kind that gets passed comes from a grassroots movement rather than from politicians themselves. Somebody is asking them to do it and then putting the issues on the table. And I think one of the things that has been missed by, you know, by some media and by some people who are considering and talking about this issue is the extent to which it's actually a public safety issue on the positive side. I mean, there are people saying, oh, this is a border safety issue, border security issue, where they're saying criminals are getting driver's licenses and things like that. But in fact, criminals are identified more through their driver's licenses than any other means. That's correct.
You know, when we talk about having a driver's license for undocumented immigrants, there are a lot of misconceptions, and I think that some media has actually perpetuating the myths instead of giving the right information. When it comes to having anybody giving the information, your name, your address, your date of birth, all that information is stored in a state database. When there is someone who doesn't show up to court, they go and retrieve that information from the database and they issue warrants for their arrest.
And if there's no license, there's no information.
There's no information, exactly. When a police officer stops an undocumented immigrant or anybody, they have a way of properly identifying this person. You know, before 2003, a lot of people were driving without a driver's license, unfortunately, because they couldn't get a driver's license. And what was happening, and what even police from their own perspective would talk about during this committee hearings, because they would go and testify, is, you know, I stop this person, and then they tell me they're, you know, Juan Lopez. But how do I really know this person's name is really Juan Lopez? And how do I know this person doesn't have a criminal background? How do I know if this person doesn't have an arrest, you know, a warrant for their arrest? How do I know anything about this person? Now they have that information. You know, we get, last week got a call from a person who had a warrant for his arrest. He got stopped, pulled over by the police, and he tried to change his name. You know, it's very interesting. He had a driver's license, and so in searching for
in his real name.
In his real name, but then he gave a different name. When they searched his wallet and found his ID, otherwise they wouldn't have been able to. They saw that this person had a warrant for his arrest, and he was arrested. You know, one of the things is that 83,000 people were willingly going to MVD clerks and MVD divisions all over the state to give their real identity information, their address, trusting a government without really knowing what was going to happen, because they wanted to comply with the law. So the proof is, if you have a system to allow people to comply with this law, people do it. And the proof is this.
83,000 people, that's how many licenses there are?
According to Tax and Revenue Department, that's the latest number.
Now, we're talking to Ilsa Lopez from Somos un Pueblo Unido and Holly Beaumont and Marina Pina. Now, what are some of the economic effects of having immigrants have driver's license? I mean, one obvious one is they have to buy insurance.
That's right. They have to buy insurance.
They have to register for their driver's license. They have to buy insurance. They are using their identification in order to have their age checked when they buy cigarettes, go into a restaurant and want to have a drink, go to the casinos and want to gamble. This is something that's going to have a negative impact on a variety of businesses who aren't going to be able to generate the income from these customers because they don't have identification. And we're getting stricter and stricter about requiring it.
One of the things that also doesn't get mentioned is when we passed this law, the law basically added some language. And the language says every immigrant, without regard to their immigration status, anybody can get a driver's license, right? They have to prove their ID, the identity. They have to give a number that we can track. They have to prove their residency. What we added is basically language that allows immigrants to use the individual tax ID number in lieu of a social security number.
Individual tax ID number, mm-hmm. ITIN.
ITIN, right. Exactly. And what that does, actually immigrants apply for this number because they're not eligible for a social security number, but they are paying income taxes federally and state. So we have people applying for this ITIN so they can get a driver's license, and at the same time when they apply, they have to, it's one of the requirements, they have to prove their identity to the federal government, they have to prove where they live, right? And then in addition to, they have to actually file their income taxes. So imagine creating a system. There's already a system that actually encourages people to pay taxes to properly identify themselves. Imagine going back to a system where none of that is happening, where none of that is encouraged.
So basically, are you saying there would be a loss of tax revenue from immigrant workers to the state of New Mexico if the driver's licenses were revoked?
That's
absolutely
right.
I think it's a piece of this whole issue that hasn't been thought through, is what it's going to cost us, not only in terms of, we believe it's a public safety issue because it makes our law enforcement job easier and safer. And so we're taxing them, their time and effort and ability to be effective. And then we're also losing revenue at a time when the state really can't afford. And we're also losing revenue for businesses. You know, we've got workers who rely on a driver's license in order to cash their paycheck. And if they can't cash their paycheck, then they can't spend that paycheck as readily as they would be able to with a driver's license.
There are also people whose job is driving.
There are also people whose jobs are driving, and we do have support for the driver's licenses from a number of industries in the state who want their employees to be licensed drivers. And also keep in mind that if you're under 25 or under in this state, in order to get a driver's license, you have to complete a training program about preventing DWIs. So it does have a positive impact on our drunk driving problem here in New Mexico. When I moved to New Mexico 25 years ago, we had about 21% of drivers in New Mexico, it was estimated, were uninsured drivers. And now we've got that down to 9%. And this is a big part of that.
And that's mainly because of immigrants.
Because immigrants have actually... We have a larger pool of insured motorists, basically. So our premiums have actually gone down. You know,
Is that right?
Yes.
Our premiums have gone
all
down
of us.
Because there's
all of us.
All of us, because there's a larger pool of drivers in the state of New Mexico, many of whom are immigrants, and they
are paying for insurance.
Who are paying for insurance and who are no more or less safe drivers than anybody else driving along Cerrillos Road at 1 in the morning on Saturday.
In fact, there are statistics that show that uninsured motorists are the unsafest, the least safe drivers because they basically haven't taken the test. They haven't studied anything about our roads, you know, and how to drive in New Mexico. So we are actually positively contributing to this, not only economy, because of all the reasons that we talked about. You know that actually, in addition to paying income taxes, anybody who has gotten a driver's license knows that we have to pay a fee to get a driver's license, that we also have to pay for registration fees, right, to get our license plates. So all of that money would be gone. We estimated, now this is a rough estimate, that if we were to take away this driver's license law, that just in the next year, without having all of, or the next actually 4 years, because people renew their driver's license either every 4 years or 8 years, just having people not renew their current driver's license, the state could lose up to $17 million. just in renewals and registration.
17, that's a lot of money these
days. It's a lot of money.
Okay, so another issue that people have been bringing up is, for example, when Arizona passed its very immigrant hostile law, which then is in the court and so on, but it was basically, let's make Arizona as hostile as possible to undocumented immigrants. A lot of them come to New Mexico, and that's true. I mean, there were people all of a sudden who came to New Mexico who were walking around and getting driver's licenses and so on. How do you respond to that? Is that a problem? Is that an issue?
You know, we've actually have been visiting every community all over the state, and we haven't really seen a lot of people who've said, I recently moved from Arizona. Traditionally, how migration pattern works is people move because there are jobs available and because they have family or they have connections in that community. And we haven't necessarily seen a huge flow of immigrants coming from Arizona because New Mexico is a poor state. We don't really have any jobs. In fact, some of our members and family members and members from Somos Un Pueblo Unido have left the state because there are no jobs available. So that's a real interesting fact, right? Quote unquote fact that hasn't been really proven.
Yeah, it's anecdotal. I mean,
exactly.
People were leaving flyers with Arizona cell phones on them shortly after that law was passed saying, you know, yard work. Things like that. And, you know, so there are people who come in, but the question is, so what? First of all, what are the numbers? You're saying they're not very high. And second, these are presumably the people who leave a state like Arizona are going to be the law-abiding citizens rather than the criminals who don't really care.
Well, there are two things, right? When we talk about immigrant families, we always have to mention that when we talk about immigrant families, we're not just talking about undocumented immigrants. We're talking about families who live in mixed status, which means that some of them have documents, some of them are in the long, cumbersome process of acquiring their legal permanent residency to later become citizens, and some of them are actually citizens. Two-thirds of undocumented immigrants have U.S. citizen children. So when we talk about immigrants, I think that we have this sort of picture in our mind, and I don't know if I can say, like, make people visualize this on the radio, but of people flooding, you know, and there's all this bunch of undocumented immigrants, whatever that means, right?
A bunch of guys.
Exactly. And so it's actually families moving, just like people from all over, you know, move to New Mexico. People move to Texas, like everybody moves to or Colorado or whatever that might be. That's the first thing. And then the second thing is that, you know, it's really when we talk about immigrants, it's a different perception. When we have people and families moving to New Mexico that are non-immigrant, people who are driving have to have a driver's license by law after 30 days of residency in the state. So why would that be different for immigrants? Do we want to exempt immigrants from our current laws? Do we want to have immigrants buying insurance and making sure that they know the road laws, you know, of New Mexico, how to drive in New Mexico? Is that what we want? So we have to ask ourselves that question, you know, and really not give in into this rhetoric and sort of exacerbated anti-immigrant rhetoric, really,
yeah,
that we keep hearing.
And also that anti-immigrant rhetoric that wants to make these broad claims about them being a criminal population. The truth is that studies have shown that immigrants and undocumented immigrants in particular are trying their very hardest to comply with the law so they don't attract any attention from law enforcement. And they're sometimes our most law-abiding residents.
Well, and I think people fail to make the distinction between people who are working in restaurants and on construction sites and so on the one hand, and people who were smuggling drugs and doing all kinds of smuggling and trafficking on the other hand. That's a different population.
That's a different population, and that's certainly the minority.
And we have that population in every community. I mean, we can't close our eyes, you know, to crime, and I think we should be worried about crime, you know, and crime prevention and all of that, and being able to identify who has committed a crime in the state. However, it's very contradictory to have some people say, we are really worried about crime. Let's not allow people to be able to identify before law enforcement. You know, let's not have let's not allow these people to properly identify. Let's not let them give us, as a state, an address where we can actually find this person. You know that actually we know for a fact that when ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, has an order of deportation that they need to serve, that they access our database to find that person and their last known address. And we know that because families have gotten visits, you know, looking for their family members who had gotten deported or who had orders of deportation for especially if you're Central American, when you cross the border, sometimes they let you go. And so that you go back to court after 6 months or whatever, right? Because they don't want to further clog the system at the border. And then people don't show up sometimes, right? And so it's very interesting. You know, we have all sorts of people accessing our databases. That's what we don't hear.
Our databases, you mean the New Mexico driver's license.
Exactly. Right. You know that we got a call from someone in Florida who lives here, who got a letter from Florida, the state of Florida, saying you owe child support. They found this person because his name and the date of birth were very close to this person who lived in Florida who owed child support. And the thing is that he had never lived in Florida, right? But it's very interesting because we're having states accessing our database, right? Trying to look for people who might have committed a crime or might be in trouble.
I think that we should take into consideration that licensing all qualified drivers is working for our state. Keeping driver's licenses for immigrants do not only benefit the immigrant community, but all New Mexicans as well. This is because under the current law, we are seeing an improvement in public safety. People are more able to stay at a crime scene if they do have a proper identification. So
if I cause an accident, I'm less likely to flee the scene if I have a proper license and registration.
Well, whether you cause it or not, if you're just involved in an accident.
Yeah.
Or if you are a victim, or if you are paying insurance, you are going to be able or more likely to stay and go through the right process.
And if you think about it the other way around, let's say you're an American who's been living legally in your own country, and then for whatever reasons of politics or destiny, you find yourself in another country, and that country accepts you and you become part of the system, you're going to behave differently than if you are some kind of illegal refugee kind of sneaking around the edges. Your whole mentality is going to be different. You're not going to feel like you're part of things, and therefore your relationship toward law enforcement and toward the legal system in which you live will be completely transformed.
You have an investment in the community. You've chosen it as your home. It's your workplace. You're raising your children here. So you are highly motivated to participate in shaping a healthy, productive, safe community.
So do you see... I mean, I know you're all in favor of retaining the immigrant driver's license law, but is there any counter argument that holds water? I've been trying to think of the only
argument that I've heard is people who just question why are we giving these people driver's licenses. It all comes down to what I consider to be sort of feeding on the anti-immigrant vitriol, and it's basically punitive. I mean, there are many of us, I think we are all working for comprehensive immigration reform, but this law, reversing this law and taking driver's licenses away from our immigrant community in New Mexico will do absolutely nothing to address that in a positive way. It just makes the circumstances worse. And this has to happen on the federal level.
And I think we should keep in mind that people before 2003 were driving without a driver's license. Now, if the governor repeals the law, people are going to keep driving because they do have to drive. They do have to take their children to the school. They do have to buy groceries. They do have to survive. This is instead of moving New Mexico forward, we are going backward.
And we're proud in New Mexico of having some of the most comprehensive and progressive and compassionate immigration policies in the country.
And practical.
And thank you for saying that. Reasonable and practical, which is what Sheriff Garcia, the county, Santa Fe County Sheriff, was... actually, I do want to mention the fact that a resolution was passed unanimously by the City Council on Wednesday, Santa Fe City Council, and that resolution was also brought to our county commissioners on Tuesday and passed unanimously with one abstention.
That said, it
was sending a message to the state legislature to please support and defend our driver's licenses regardless of immigration status.
Now, what is the movement to repeal the driver's license law in the legislature? In other words, there has been a bill already introduced?
Yes, there was a bill introduced at the beginning of the session, the second day of the session, by Representative Andy Nunez from Hatch, who was Democrat, and I believe now he's an independent. And it basically is a straight repeal. And when we talk to the legislatures, you know, they are very concerned that they shouldn't be. They're not for a straight repeal, people that we have talked to, supporters of the law, people who voted for this law, because they understand, like you said, how practical it is for New Mexico's, for keeping with public safety in New Mexico, for you know, to strengthen efforts to prevent DWIs in underage drinking. It provides obviously important tools for law enforcement, and it also contributes economically to this state. You know, you were talking, it's very interesting, you were talking about before how we belong to this state, or you belong to wherever you move, right? A lot of people have moved to New Mexico. We belong, immigrants belong to New Mexico. We chose New Mexico, and this is the community that we want to see prosper. People are not, I've asked people point blank at this community meetings that we've had all over the state, because there are a lot of worries in the immigrant community about just the things that they've been hearing on the media. And I asked, you know, well, did you come to New Mexico because we gave driver's licenses? And they said, no. Why did you come? Well, we came to work, and because we have family members. And then I said, well, would you leave? You know, would you leave the state? Would you go live somewhere else? And they said, no, because this is where our children were born, and we're raising our children here, and this is our community. I want New Mexico to prosper, just as anybody who was born here, because this is my home. You know, and so it really is interesting. There is another idea we haven't really seen, a proposal being dropped in addition to Representative Nunez, who's a straight repeal, that is a straight repeal, basically. We have heard, or we've in the paper, I think we read that another representative wants, there is this idea of a driving certificate, and we are quite troubled with this idea, because it basically would be driving around with the scarlet letter saying, here I am, I'm undocumented. And we've asked immigrants in the community, would you be driving around with a driving certificate, who basically only those who don't have a social security number can get, or would you rather be driving without a driver's license? And most of the people say, I would rather be driving without a driver's license, because I would not be willing to, you know, single myself out that way.
Right.
It just basically creates a worse problem, and it's not very practical.
And I think, you know, it's suggested by some with good intention, but personally it sends a chill through me at the idea of setting up a special kind of identification for one group of people in our society.
It does remind one of...
We won't even go there. It's chilling.
Yeah.
Pink triangles, exactly.
So, Marina, you recently graduated from college in the state system here in New Mexico, and you were part of a movement to make college accessible for immigrants. Tell us about that.
Yes. In 2005, Somos un Pueblo Unido did a campaign for the SB 582, which allows undocumented students to attend college and get state financial aid, such as the lottery scholarship. I was in Portales High School, and a group of students came to Santa Fe to lobby and actually talk to our legislators about the importance of allowing access to undocumented students to college. That's how I got involved with Somos Un Pueblo Unido, and that's how I found out about the organization. And when we were here at the legislature, more than 450 students from around the state came to talk to our legislators. And I always say that if we wouldn't come here, this law wouldn't pass. Right. And now, since 2005, many students, smart, young, talented students, are being able to have access to college. And some of them are already graduated from college.
And these are the future professionals of our state, who then become more high-functioning members of society and end up probably paying more taxes in the long run as well.
And we do have more educated people and immigrants and in New Mexico. And I think these students, we really love New Mexico and we want to be here and we want to contribute to the state and to the country if we had an opportunity.
And this is another example, Mary Charlotte, on how the state legislature has taken a common sense approach to dealing with immigration. As Holly was saying, immigration reform has to be dealt at the federal level. But meanwhile, we are dealing with this issue in our local communities. And New Mexico has decided to take a stand, very different stand than many other border communities. As our neighbors in Arizona, as our neighbors in Texas. And this other law that allows qualified immigrants who have actually graduated from high schools in New Mexico has basically sent that message too. You know, we have already invested a lot of money on these students through the K-12 education system. Why wouldn't we not reap the benefits of that investment?
Why basically? Cut it off now?
Exactly.
Right. I wonder also to what extent New Mexicans recognize that, especially our immigrant friends from Mexico, are culturally and even by blood more related to New Mexicans than people who come in from Connecticut or someplace else.
I think that the reason why we honestly have this loss that we have and we have taken as a state a common sense approach is because people recognize that exact regional connection, basically, especially people who, like a lot, most immigrants come from Mexico. A lot of immigrants come from Central America now, moving into New Mexico, but people come a lot from Chihuahua, right? And there is a really, I think, special connection between Chihuahua and this region because it was a region before, right? And our families lived on the other side of the river, right? And I think that it's honestly because of that that we have this laws that we have passed, and that the legislature, I remember at the legislature at the first at the plenary when they were debating driver's licenses, you know, people kept saying, you know, why would we give this driver's license to illegals? And I remember Representative Rodela from Española got up and said, the only aliens I know live in Roswell. She said, these are our primos, you know, our cousins, our family, and we have to extend our hand to them. And I honestly think that there is honestly a connection that people get.
Yeah, for all of the media hype about animosity between.
Oh yeah, we have not seen that, yeah. You know. And just going back to driver's licenses just a little bit, there is a very interesting question that we got asked by during the Sheriff's Association meeting here in Santa Fe. We had the opportunity to go and present this information. And someone got up and said, well, I am very upset that I can't use my driver's license to travel, to board planes. And I just want to reiterate that actually, if people are worried that New Mexico, because New Mexico hasn't basically complied with real ID requirements, which other 40 states haven't, right, because they're so onerous and they're expensive and not a lot of people would actually be able to comply with those, that the Real ID Act actually allows for states to give driver's licenses to undocumented immigrants.
Is that right?
That's right. It's on the law. It's actually, written in the law and affirmatively giving the right to states to giving driver's licenses to undocumented immigrants. Now there is a whole, obviously, it's very cumbersome. The Real ID Act has been, the regulations and the implementation have been postponed because of the fact that 40 states have refused to comply with those regulations, right? And only 4 states give driver's licenses to immigrants. So, you know, it's a misconception a lot of times because we keep hearing it on articles. at the Albuquerque Journal and you know, on different articles and in the media. We keep believing the message. But just because you hear it enough, it doesn't make it a fact.
It doesn't make it true. Now, there is a day of action at the Roundhouse this Wednesday, the 2nd of February.
Yes, we do have a date of action, immigrant date of action, on this Wednesday, the 2nd. We are having legislative training
at El Museo Cultural at 8 o'clock in the morning. And then from there, from El Museo, we're actually going to walk to the Vargas Park. People, we understand many people would be working that day, but if you have an hour to march with us, we're marching for public safety. We're marching for driver's licenses for immigrants. We're marching for justice and the Immigrant Day of Action. People, we have people confirmed from about 14 communities. We have people coming from Clovis, Portales, Lovington, Dexter, New Mexico, Roswell, Lovington, Ruidoso, Hatch, Las Cruces, Farmington, Taos, Española, Albuquerque, and Santa Fe. And so if you want to come and see people from all over the state, and if you believe in the right of everyone's public safety, you know, our message is don't put politics over our public safety. We really need a common sense approach to this issue. We're going to march at 12 o'clock from the Vargas Park.
Where's the Vargas Park?
The Vargas Park is located in the corner of Alameda and Guadalupe Street, right in front of the Santuario de Guadalupe, Our Lady of Guadalupe Church. Then we'll be marching through Alameda and up to the Capitol on Old Santa Fe Trail. We'll have a rally in front of the Capitol right after the march. And then after that, people from all over the state, including Santa Fe, obviously, will have the opportunity to talk directly to the legislators. We'll break up into districts. We'll have lots of materials during the training at 8 o'clock. From 8 to 11, we'll have a breakfast and in a training. We'll talk about the messages. We'll talk about what is our unified message, but also how to go and talk to legislators, because a lot of people haven't done this before. We all did it once for the first time, right? And so we actually provide great training. And this is a beautiful experience for many people. You know, a lot of legislators don't get a lot of visits from their constituents. We have stories from when back in 2005 when we were passing the state law to allow immigrant students, from people who said, I have never been visited by a constituent in the years that I've been here.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes. We have
ladies and gentlemen, citizens, visit your citizen legislators. So El Museo Cultural at 8 o'clock. And if you don't want to do that, or if it's too early, or if you're working, you can go to De Vargas Park at noon.
Exactly. And then the other thing, if you can make it for the day of action, if you want to receive the latest update as to what's happening and when it's happening, I invite you to write us an email at somos@somosunpueblounido.org and send us your cell phone number. We have a text alert system where you can actually receive this information. We're also having a call-in day on the 3rd and the 4th following the day of action for people who couldn't come to the day of action so that they can call.
So how do they sign up for that?
They send us to somos@somosunpueblounido.org their cell phone number. We sign them up and then we'll text them.
So you go to somosunpueblounido.org and on the website it'll be clear how to
do that. Yes, exactly.
Elsa Lopez and Maria Pina are with Somos Un Pueblo Unido, and Reverend Holly Beaumont is with Interfaith Worker Justice New Mexico, and we will link to their organizations on SantaFeRadioCafe.org. Thank you all so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte.
Thank you. We're going to take a break right now. We'll be back in a moment talking to Robert Knott. Please stay with us on KSFR. I'd like now to welcome to the program Robert Knott. He is the education reporter for the Santa Fe New Mexican. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Good morning, and I don't want to waste too much time saying happy belated birthday to you and to me,
to
which
both
we
of
both
us.
Enjoy sort of over the holidays.
That's right. We don't know what astrological sign we are anymore, but we don't really care that much.
Oh, how nice. But we do care. We should care. I want people to care, and I thank you for giving me a few minutes today about the school board, the county school board election, which is tomorrow, Tuesday, February 1st.
County school board election. And this is something that we've been reading about in the paper and hearing about a little bit. There's quite a lot of candidates to fill three seats.
Three different seats, District 1, District 2, District 4.
Now, keep in mind, ladies and gentlemen, these are not city council districts.
No, correct.
These are county districts. Well, I'm in one district in the city and a different district in the county, and I have found that very confusing.
And it's my understanding, and I'm very cautious in my words, that the county districts are even slightly different from the school district. So here, first of all, to discuss this for a minute. If you honestly don't know which county you're in or whether you are viable...
Well, you know which county you're in, but which county district you're in.
Thanks, the district, the school district. The three that are up for election are 1, 2, and 4. I'll talk about the candidates in a moment. The simplest thing, go to santafecounty.org/clerk, the Santa Fe County's clerk's office. I'm going to give you a phone number, 986-6280. Maybe they don't want to field calls all day today and tomorrow, but they will answer your question as to where you are. You can also go to Santa Fe.
And the website is good.
The website is good, the santafepublicschools.info, SFPSinfo. Will also tell you probably what district you live in, and it will separate the three districts. District 1 sort of covers the center to the south, and it includes the following schools: Chaparral, E.J. Martinez, Pinon Elementary, as well as Capshaw Middle and Santa Fe High. District 2 is considered sort of the downtown area, swinging out also to El Dorado, and it's four elementary schools, which is El Dorado, Acequia Madre, and Atalaya, and Wood Gormley. And finally, District 4 is sort of also south of town, the south part of town, Agua Fria, Cesar Chavez, Sweeney Elementary Schools, Ortiz Middle School, Capital High School, Ramirez Thomas Elementary School, and I think one of the other schools. Now I feel bad, but that's basically it. You can figure out where you are. If you honestly don't know, it won't be hard to either through the Santa Fe County or Santa Fe Public Schools website.
So I went to that, and I figured out that I am in a particular district that isn't voting. Now, not all of them are voting.
No,
so
District
I'm in
3 and 5 are not voting.
Yeah.
There are five members, and every 2 years you vote on two or three of them, which gives them new life. So two of the members, Barbara Goodwin and Frank Montaño, are good for 2 more years. They will be up for re-election if they choose to run in 2012. Board members are elected tomorrow. March 1st is when they take office. And school board elections generally garner about 5% of the population. And people need to care. They don't need me preaching
5%
to them. 5%? Yes.
That's nothing.
Let's up that to 10% at least, and get people out there to care. If you have children in the system, if you've had children in the system, if you may conceive and have children in the system, if you care about the well-being of the community in terms of its culture,
if you care about whether the future workforce, children, even if they're not yours, are able to punctuate words and sentences.
And work here. Come out of high school and be able to work. Please, it's not hard to play a role. If you don't know the issues, it's not too late.
Okay.
First of all, honestly.
Because Robert Knott will tell us right now what
the issues
are.
Yeah, thank you. Google me. Google the New Mexican. A week ago, Sunday on the 23rd, I did profiles of the candidates. You know what? Google Phil Parker at the Albuquerque Journal. He did profiles of the candidates. Alexa Schertzinger, I don't know if I'm pronouncing her last name correctly, at the Santa Fe Reporter, has done pop quizzes of the candidates. It wouldn't be hard to find this stuff online or to call those newspapers and say, I'm looking for these articles, help me. I would help you with the Santa Fe New Mexican. I bet any money Phil Parker would at the Journal. I'm sure that Alexa would at Santa Fe Reporter. Three print media outlets that have done pretty good synopses and profiles of all the candidates. Nine candidates total. Seven are actively seeking office, and what I mean by that is two others, one in District 1, one in District 4, have basically suspended their campaigns, but they are on the ballot.
Okay.
And now I can go through the candidates if you want for each district. Does that work for you?
Yeah.
District 1, you have incumbent Mary Ellen Gonzalez. She's been on the board 8 years. Her challengers are Stephen Carrillo, who's been a union organizer and a contract negotiator. He's currently a waiter. And Carl Luff. Carl Luff is a CPA, a business owner. He's volunteered for the school district for about 15 years on various audit and budget committees, but he's never been a school district employee. Those are the three district ones. In district two, you have no incumbent, so you have three new people. Glenn Weichel, a parent, a computer scientist. He's been very active in helping to keep the Acequia Madre Atalaya consolidation from not happening, in the sense of keeping Acequia Madre school where he has a daughter open. Melissa Coleman is the parent of two kids at Atalaya. One's a special needs child. And Donato Cove Coviello, somewhat well-known. He's in his mid-60s. Artist activist, has run in many elections unsuccessfully.
Yeah, he's run for all sorts of things.
And he likes to always stir things up a little. But
yeah, he's a... What is the word for that?
I'm not using any word.
Stirrer-upper.
A stirrer-upper is okay. Those are your three District 2 candidates. And finally, in District 4, Linda Trujillo, basically...
Now, have any of those that you've mentioned so far suspended their candidacy?
No.
Okay.
In District 1, Alexis Lotero, she will still be on the ballot. She's run... basically no campaign. Can you vote for her? You can, actually. But she didn't respond to personality profiles. And in District 4, the same is true of a man named Jason Romero, who has announced he has suspended his campaign and he is backing his only opponent, Linda Trujillo. So that's District 4.
So it basically, really, Linda, ladies Trujillo's, and gentlemen, you don't want to vote for people who aren't campaigning, and especially
because they don't want the job.
They don't want the job.
And then the chances are they'll say, I don't want it, and the school board will have to elect somebody anyway. So in District 4, Linda Trujillo, that doesn't mean you should not vote in District 4. Show people you care. Show people you have a voice. Get out there in all three districts. You can be the agents of change. It doesn't have to be the school board members.
Oh, you mean so there's only one candidate in District 4?
Basically, Linda Trujillo, because Jason Romero, her opponent, said, I'm behind Linda. I'm popping out. But they stay on the ballot because they didn't withdraw by the end of the year. If you don't withdraw by the end of the year last year, you stay on the ballot. The county can't change that.
So what, in your view, Robert Knott, are the issues?
The issues and the challenges can be two different things, and that's, I like to make that distinction as I continue to learn as the education reporter what's happening. The challenges have been played up so much that people think the school board is often reactive rather than proactive, which is what I think some of the people running for school board are trying to change. But the issues are continually money problems. The state funds to the tune of more than 95% the schools around the state. The challenges are trying to reach across to broad cultural, racial, ethnic, socioeconomic divide and make sure all the students get an equitable education. The challenges and the issue should be trying to improve academic achievement, trying to improve the high school graduation rate. And among the other issues are everything from, do we continue with the notion of K-8 since they're still fairly new? Do we try to find new ways to increase revenue beyond what the state's giving us to help get money to the classroom?
Big sales. Do we
evaluate teachers and make sure they're on the money? Do we excite them, engage them? Do we engage students? There's really no issue that doesn't touch the Santa Fe Public School or any public school district in the state in terms of all those elements.
I think it's, I was thinking about this, nonprofits like KSFR and like so many others devote so much of their time that they could be devoting to actual programs, to fundraising in order to stay alive. When that starts happening in the school system, you've really got a big, big problem, especially when there's a huge amount of economic inequality.
It does, and there are limitations that I understand that a school board or a district can do in terms of raising money, which any school board member needs to be aware of. I don't have them all down pat, but I am learning more about how school boards operate. And some of the new challengers who are embracing and proposing change, all of whom, incidentally, I absolutely believe are very passionate and excited. They seem to have varying degrees of understanding of what a school board can do, but some of them are doing, they want to do more than think outside the box. They want to be able to act outside the box, and that's really exciting in a way. I don't know whether they will be able to legally, statewide, mandate-wise, but they want to, and there's an excitement there, and I'm trying to make that excitement move into the electorate and get them out tomorrow to vote between 7 and 7. You can find out where to vote. Call Santa Fe County, 986-6280. Visit the website. You can still get this done by tomorrow.
So districts 1, 2, and 4 are up for election. You can find out. You can go to santafecounty.org and find out what district you're in. Ladies and gentlemen, it's your right and it's your duty.
And as I mentioned in my column today, Monday, I believe it gives you a right to talk about the school system if you vote.
Yeah.
I will also say, and probably annoy a lot of people, if you're honestly, totally uninformed and have no time to get informed, I'm of the belief it's probably better not to vote.
Yeah.
Uninformed voters don't help. You can still inform yourself in 24 hours.
Yeah, then you vote for somebody because you like their name.
Right, and I honestly, even if it angers people and it doesn't increase the voting numbers, but you can. You have 24 hours. You can do some research tonight.
Well, today it's before 9 o'clock.
Right.
And you've got the whole rest of the day and then all of tomorrow to go to santafenewmexican.com and read Robert Knott's articles.
Thanks.
On the school board candidates.
And I'm also still going to plug Phil Parker at the Journal. He's a good education writer. And Alexa Schertzinger over at the Reporter. She's done some interesting things. I hope they both stay on it because it's important for us to keep covering education. We're trying our best. We're all imperfect. So are the school board candidates. But damn, they are passionate. And it's exciting to me. And I hope people get out there, share the excitement, and vote. I will be voting in District 2. I'm not telling anyone who I'm voting for, ever. I know I could sway the election by as little as 10 votes. And these elections are won. I'm less than 10 votes sometimes. Get out there, please, tomorrow and vote.
Robert Knott is the educational reporter for the Santa Fe New Mexican. He used to be with us speaking of the arts. We miss you, but we're glad that you found a new place in education. You're loving it.
I'm loving it. I'm trying my best. I'm still learning. I'm not perfect. I'm making mistakes.
You're not perfect?
I would like...
Ladies and gentlemen.
Only when I'm dealing with
you. Stop the presses.
I will make occasional visits back. I think I'm going to come on your St. Patrick's Day show and sing Danny Boy for you.
Good.
And occasionally I supply an article for Pasta Tiempo, but it's education's taking my time and my passion, and I'm really excited about it. And I'm excited about the vote tomorrow. Please get out there and do this.
Robert Knott, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for giving me the time.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're streaming live on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org. Thanks to Dotfoil Computer Services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can find us at facebook.com/radiocafe, and my email address is radiocafe@ksfr.org. Stay tuned for the BBC, then local news, then jazz.